I've been predicting America will have a civil war or revolution since 2020. Back then, this sort of thing appeared distant, like something you would read about in a history book. The scary thing is that now it's real. My friends at the Sitch and Adams podcast like to say wars like this go from people LARPing to until they stop and the LARPing turns real. Hitler was LARPing conquering Eastern Europe. The communists were LARPing revolution and the American South was LARPing secession. It's all fun and games until the Nerf guns get replaced for AR-15s. The scary thing now is that there have been a series of horrifying events that only make sense in a context of a society that's about to have a civil war. The most recent example is Texas saying the federal government has abandoned its duty to the nation by letting millions of immigrants cross the Mexican border, and Texas won't take it anymore. Now half the states in the country have supported Texas, and 10 have offered to send troops to help protect Texas. Maine and Colorado tried to take Trump off the ballot, and New Mexico tried to ban guns. These are all things in which the only previous precedent in our nation's history was the last Civil War. The last time states bucked the central government in this manner, or states took candidates from the main opposition party off their ballot, was 1860. That's not a good sign. For a bunch of reasons, I think that we'll start having violence over the next year. I don't think American society can make it through the 2024 election without collapsing into civil war. We might not even have that much time, if I'm being honest. Part 1. Deciding factors. On this channel, I have multiple long videos talking about why America might have a civil war and what sort of context informs it. The shortest answer I'll use to summarize it here is that there are very clear patterns which predict when societies have revolutions or civil wars. Peter Turchin is a great model which 10 years ago predicted America would have a civil war. His computer model has predicted the Russian Revolution, French Revolution, Roman Civil Wars, Black Death, or the religious wars of the 17th century, to the exact periods they took place in based off three variables. Those being elite overproduction, or how many people are competing for elite jobs, low average wages, and inequality. These three factors predict revolutions and civil wars, given that once 80% of the population is poor and has no incentive to cooperate, it means that society falls apart. This then results in a situation in which different factions split up among the population, since the mainstream is failing. Over history, this has been the whites and reds, north and south, Armagnacs and Burgundians, or Lancasters and Yorkists. In each case, these factions represented sub-demographics of the population trying to take over. In ours, this is the college-educated left versus non-college-educated right. As I explain here in this text wall, every single policy the left pushes benefits the college-educated, giving them jobs and power. Meanwhile, the opposite is true for the right, which stands for the military, business, and religious interests who don't base their social status off college degrees. I would highly recommend the book Leviathan and Its Enemies by Samuel Francis. It's one of the best political books I've ever read, where Francis was a conservative who, in this book, was doing a Marxist class analysis of modern society. It talks about how the college-educated, or the managerial class as he calls them, dominate society, and thus the left dominates all the institutions. As a general rule, you can predict if someone is right or left-wing based off how much agency they have in their work. Anyone who works in a large bureaucracy will tilt left, and anyone who has agency in their work, even if they're poor like small business owners or farmers, will tilt right. Our society is managed by vast impersonal bureaucracies, so the left can manage all the large institutions, whether Hollywood, the media, Wall Street, corporations, the high ranks of the military, the churches, presidency, government bureaucracy, and tech. One of the ways I hone my predictive abilities is to look backwards over history to see what people were accurate in predicting the future. Then I try to figure out what things they did right and use it myself. There are some absurd examples. I do wonder how much of this is on a purely intuitive level that we don't understand. Like, there was a book 100 years ago that said the Lord of Mars would be called the Ilona. Another book written in the 60s, and here's a text wall because it got a lot of stuff right, said that in 2011, America would have its first black president named Abomey. However, there are about five other theories of history besides Turchin's which converge on America having a civil war in the 2020s. You have Goldstein, which in the 70s looked at economic factors saying America will have a major war in the 2020s. This is one of the worst written books I have ever read, so please thank me for reading it for you. Then the Strauss house system in the 90s predicted America would have a civil war in the 2020s due to generational patterns. Also, authors like Amaury de Rayancourt in the 60s thought in the 21st century America would have a period of civil wars and Caesarism like the late Roman Republic. With all of these factors together, I can say it's probable that we'll have another civil war soon. I want to be clear that I'm not sure what type of conflict this will be. I do think the right would win given it gives the best incentives to young men who fight wars while the left hates them. The left also hates martial traits like aggression, discipline, hierarchy, duty, or honor. The left is split into a bunch of city-states, while the right has a single geographic region. Enlisted men and officers in the military tilt right while the left has the top brass of the leadership. All food, oil, and manufacturing production is in conservative areas. For all of these reasons, I think the right has a very large advantage over the left. That being said, it's hard for me to get further than that. The world is chaotic, and one of my catchphrases is that I'm betting against God. What that means is that there are a million ways to be wrong and only a handful to be right. Almost all predictions of the future are wrong, and so will mine be. Anyone who claims any other standard is a charlatan. I have a solid amount of correct and incorrect predictions under my belt. Keep in mind, I'm a 22-year-old with no credentials. Listen to me at your own risk. The way the future works is that there are key moments in which seconds determine everything and change the future. World War I was like that, in which there are many timelines where the Central Powers win, and that completely changes the rest of the century. Also, at the start of World War I, there were a series of decisions which decided everything. You could have seen a war without Britain as an example. The problem is it's impossible to figure out which of these die rolls will turn out, as in most cases, there are about seven different options that all have a less than 20% likelihood. So it's really difficult to figure out which 20% shot's gonna happen. I'm certain that in the next year we'll have a handful of these die rolls. My friends like to stress out the future here, and what I tell them is that we've done everything we can to prepare. I say I'm not going to worry more until I see what those decisive moments are and what's gonna happen next. And until then, I have no idea what's gonna manifest. The exact form in which this war starts is incredibly important. In retrospect, whether this turns into a civil war, revolution, or international war will be obvious, but it won't be to us. For example, slight tilts in the military's loyalty will determine how the war goes. If almost all of the military defects to the right, it'll be like the French Revolution, where the right just slaughters the left. Otherwise, if it's more, it could be like the previous American Civil War, being a real war with campaigns that take years, as the military is balanced. A situation in which the right could very easily lose is one in which there's a rebellion that's too early, which is very clearly illegal. What I know about the military is that they are thankfully loyal to the law. If the rightist rebels are very clearly in the wrong, the military, which in most cases tilts right, will just crush it. This would then make the entire right look like traitors. The left could use this to legally crush the rebellion in its entirety, using charges of insurrection. This is why I've told the right repeatedly to not rebel out of the blue. The left's greatest trick is baiting the right into hazard. The left's psychology is female and the right's is male. Women will do low-level aggression much more than men. They lie more, spread more rumors, insult more in nonviolent action. Men tend to go from 1 to 10, in that guys are either friends or they're beating the crap out of each other. I think the left is trying to agitate the right so much so that the right has to do something crazy so that the left can get a consensus that the right is dangerous. It's effectively a wife begging her husband to beat her again and again so that when he actually does do so, she can take him to court as an abuser. The sad thing is that in our society, she can just say that he beat her without any evidence and the court will believe it. I know a couple of people that happened to. We all need to be very careful over the next year. For normal people, keep your eyes open for when these decisive shifts might happen. If you're a blue person in Texas or a red person in California, California, try to figure out when a good time would be to get out for your own safety. Lots of death happens in civil wars, and people hate the other side. Think of all the Jews in Poland in 1939 who considered fleeing, then thought of how all their family, work, and friends were there. They then died at Auschwitz. It was so horrible they couldn't predict it, but that didn't stop it from happening. This also all happened within living memory. For people in power watching, be careful of traps that the other side might be placing. You have the weight of history on your shoulders. For all of us in these hard times, we must do our duty and stay honorable. My father said to me growing up, "Rudyard, there are certain hills that you have to die on to be a man. At the end, you will be judged whether or not you stood where you needed to stand." Part 2. Our emotional state. Something we forget in this day and age is that human societies are living, breathing things, since they're filled with living, breathing people. Societies experience the same emotions and mental illnesses that individuals do. A great failing of our society is that we need a spreadsheet or scientific study to say what's obvious to anyone with a supple mind. It's obvious women are more emotional than men. I communicate with women differently due to that. It's obvious that America is a better country than Mexico, given tens of millions of Mexicans immigrated here and the reverse didn't happen. If a guy is charging you with a machete, you should be scared. The thing is that if you just look outside, it's obvious to me that we're about to have a civil war. This is kind of cringe since the worst people say this, but I think I might be an empath. I can't help but pick up on the emotions of the people around me. When I'm in a city, I can feel a certain vibe based off that city. When I speak before a crowd, I feel that it has an energy that I can almost play like a musician. The thing is that the vibes today are absolutely horrible, far worse than they have been at any previous point in my life. I've stopped going to major cities anymore since the vibes are just too bad. It feels like nails on a chalkboard. Everyone's depressed. Everything's deteriorating, the air feels like tar. If I'm honest, nature, away from the human world, is where I find solace now. I have two friends who are professional experts in body language and language usage. They say that the language and actions now show that we will have a civil war soon. There's so much pent-up negative emotion now that needs to go somewhere. It's a natural biological reaction like crying or throwing up. It arises naturally from the population. Bloodlust is spreading among young people across the political spectrum. Most of the most important leftist streamers have talked about how violence against the right is justified. Hillary Clinton literally said that Trump supporters needed to be put in re-education camps. Biden released a video on what we must do to save democracy and showed images of armed people. Whenever I log onto right-wing Twitter, the air and culture is just so insanely bloodthirsty. Appeals to humanity are kicked or stomped at. There is now literally a large segment of the population who are basically theocrats or fascists. The irony is that there were none of these even 3 years ago, but the left calling everyone Nazis made people think, why not? It's better than being on the left. For people not involved, I can't overstate how bloodthirsty Twitter is today. I read the comments section of every political video I watch and tweet threads for different political subcommunities. I do this since I want to keep a pulse on whatever is going on at any given time. From looking at this, things are really bad. People are just seething. For some reason, the Israel war is driving people really crazy. I'm not sure why, we're not involved, and as an Anglo-American, I'm not sure what this war means to me. However, people have a tremendous amount of emotion about it. People are going to say the internet's not real life, but that's kind of not true anymore. For a lot of people, they spend more time on the internet than in the actual interpersonal social world, especially for the young people who would fight this war. And people LARP and basically say crazy stuff on Twitter, but the problem is those people are meeting up and they will become the next generation of rebels. The people talking crazy stuff on Twitter, the thing is they actually believe it. When the nice guy at work posts insane stuff on the internet, what you're seeing on the internet is who he actually is. The guy at work is a facade. A big trend I've seen is the breakdown of a shared narrative. Everyone I see or talk to follows at least one bizarre conspiracy theory, has some bizarre unhinged takes, and I think that probably includes me. Try to find a single celebrity who hasn't said anything insane. What this means is the breakdown of a shared political consensus, or the biggest thing that prevents civil wars. The political Overton window today compared to 10 years ago, back then everyone would think that we're insane. What I see is regularly some of the most unhinged, retarded takes. People will just say stuff completely unsubstantiated in fact. I often see people say Hitler was really the good guy. One of my boomer friends joked that for guys in my age group, it's worse to be called a normie than a Nazi at this point. I'm a big fan of Healthy Gamer GG, who gives psychological advice. He has a great video on burnout. Burnout is when it feels like you're not getting ahead, and it always starts long before people realize it. Burnout often is taking over someone for months before it completely destroys them overnight. The first big trait in burnout is loss of empathy. Once you hear about someone else's suffering and you just don't care. I've tested this. I've made Twitter and YouTube posts about empathizing for others. People just tell me to fuck off. Our society is so tired of empathy. We don't care about anyone else's struggles except our own, since life is so hard. I sympathize. This has also been gradually happening to me too. Something I'd like to point out is that empathy is not what most people think it is. Most people, when they hear empathy, think about sympathy, which is feeling sorry for someone, rather than what empathy actually means, which is the ability to put yourself in someone's shoes and mentalize them. Bismarck was very high in empathy, and he used that to win 5 wars by mentalizing his enemy's strategies. Empathy is generally always good. Our society is very high in sympathy, which often makes us act in a stupid way, and actually very low in empathy. Let me give an example. I'll say Gen Z has it rough. Lots of older generations will say that's not the case. Gen Z has it easy. I disagree, but that objection from older people doesn't actually come from thinking about Gen Z itself. It's coming from them thinking, my life is hard, those Gen Z have it worse. The reality is both millennials and Gen Z can have it rough without negating how rough the other one has it. Another example is I've said men have oppressed women over history. Right-wingers have rejected that. The thing is, I agree with the right that the whole history of gender relations is not oppression. It's due to the often biological differences between men and women. However, I can't write off foot-binding, widow-burning, or female genital mutilation as okay. Men have oppressed women over history from time to time. However, that would involve saying your enemies are correct at least a little bit. This is what a complete lack of empathy looks like. It's also what tribalism looks like. We've fractured into tribes. I test people socially from time to time. People have lost the ability to admit any fault on their side and saying anything good about the other side. This weakens our strategic abilities by making us irrational. If you tell a leftist that Trump was a good president on foreign policy, they'll have an aneurysm. I see this on the left too, like SNL or The Atlantic protecting Harvard in its unsavory issues with anti-Semitism and plagiarism. No one is willing to hold their own side accountable. A society this divided does not exist as a society. It's socially already in a civil war. Our society is horribly burnt out due to a litany of factors which mostly narrow down to desperation and being tired of ennui. The last 3 years since COVID have been brutal for everyone, and you've seen our society go completely crazy due to it. This period has just left everyone completely numb. It's been a barrage of insane news, hopelessness, with economic issues, the elites lying and gaslighting us, while 2/3 of men are single and most people are desperately lonely. The point where I see the general zeitgeist is they just can't bear it anymore. We're getting to the point where a large part of the population needs a civil war so they don't kill themselves. Authors over the 20th century have often asked the question, how can people kill others so easily? This was since they believed that there had been tremendous progress, and then the world devolved into the horrors of the world wars, perpetuated by the most advanced countries in the world. Meanwhile, Germany, considered one of the most civilized and enlightened countries in the world, committed one of the worst atrocities ever through the Holocaust. The short answer is that we humans are a lot more primal and savage than we imagined. Civilization is a tiny veneer to a very deep savagery that's right underneath the surface. We as humans naturally like killing. We evolved to enjoy it. We're tribalistic by nature and everything else is a very thin aberration. We know this to be true since the group which tried to remove tribalism has now become the most tribalistic demographic in society. We're reverting back to who we really are. What I'm trying to convey is that on an emotional, intuitive basis, I don't think we can last much longer. We're bursting with so many emotions that we can't survive as a unified country for 5 years. It's like when you're drinking and you feel nauseous, but you think you'll be fine. Then you need to throw up and you suddenly aren't. Part 3. Normie Mindset. I've said before that the impulse that pushes us to violence is fundamentally biological. It's like being thirsty or angry. A problem here is that different sub-demographics of the population have very different self-interests in this situation. This combined with tribalism creates vastly different attitudes among different parts of the population at the exact same time, which aren't communicated with any other parts of the population. One of the things you hear about pretty often in history books, so much so that it's become almost a trope, is that when the revolution starts, the elite has no comprehension that it could possibly occur. I often hear stories of the Chinese emperor locked in his palace, secluded among eunuchs, bureaucrats, and harem girls, only realizing the empire is doomed as Mongols or rebels scale the walls. Growing up, I thought we were better than that, but we're not. Over the last year, I've seen the rise in what I call normie mindset. For older people, the term normie is what young people call people who are too normal. It's a term of contempt for those who have no clue about the things actually going on in the world. This is a group of people who reject that we will ever have a civil war, that it's just not going to happen. Some of my friends see this as a sign that things are getting better. I don't believe that. I think this is just a group of people who are able to completely ignore everything going on, but as things got worse, they had to come to terms with it. Instead of doing that, they just say nothing is going to happen even louder. The reason I say this is the normies never actually posit a reason why there won't be a civil war. I've never heard one of the normies posit an actual argument. We often take people's arguments seriously in this day and age, even when they don't really give us a reason to or provide an argument for why we should take them seriously. However, an argument without an argument is just a rationalization. This is a group of people who can't imagine the idea of a revolution or civil war ever happening, so they reject the concept out of hand. Keep in mind that as things get harder, people cope harder because they can't deal with it. And so you get into this infinite cycle of people's lives getting harder and then them coping harder until things will get so bad they can't ignore it. The reason for this is that our society has been so peaceful that people emotionally can't get past the idea on a psychological basis. The irony, though, is that when a lot of the population thinks there can't be a civil war, is exactly the best time for a civil war. This is since when people can't take something seriously, they won't prepare for it, and thus it creates an incentive to rebel. If the establishment took this threat seriously, the revolution would look too difficult and people would give up, meaning it wouldn't hit critical mass. Our society suffers an enormous cultural amnesia problem. We can't remember or respect anything from before living memory. As those who fought in World War II die out, there stops being any concept that there can be large-scale violence on any level. I think it's unimaginable to a lot of people. The problem is that when you look back over history, violence is the norm, not the exception. The English-speaking world has had a major war like clockwork every 80 years, whether World War II, the American Civil War, the American Revolution, the Glorious Revolution, the English Civil War, and you could go further back. When you look back over history, you find that betting on long-term peace has horrible odds. A single lifetime might be peaceful, but the chances for an entire century are incredibly low. All the societies which had revolutions couldn't believe it at the time. As the Russian or French Revolution started, the elites were caught completely off guard. Look at how the elites weren't able to predict Trump at all in our era. People were surprised by World War I, II, or the American Civil War. Every era thinks they're special, and they're just not. If we want to do otherwise, that's crazy. Apocryphally, the definition of insanity is trying the same thing again and again and expecting otherwise. Look at these photos of Berlin, Paris, and Russia before their political insanities. Does this look like a society which is about to commit one of the worst atrocities ever? That's the problem with modernity. We have no conception of what human nature really is, so it constantly bites us in the ass. One of the things I find very surprising is that conservatives over the age of 40 seem to think the left is the most aggressive faction while the right is too cowardly and weak to fight. The great irony is that for under 40s, it's the exact opposite. Young men on the right have a visceral bloodthirstiness inside of them. It's exactly flipped while we see young leftists as weak and disorganized. The thing is that wars are fought by the young. The rebellion forming among young men, which I talk about in this video, is something completely new. It doesn't hold the old right in much esteem. In fact, most of the conservative leadership knows nothing about it. This new faction views most of the established conservatives as weak and decadent, let alone leftists, which it loathes completely. About a year ago, I predicted the rise of this faction, and people didn't believe me, and now they're here, right in front of us. The older people confuse the left's desire to protest with actual ability to fight. No young people on the left have the ability to fight at all. They don't own guns, they're inherently anxious, they don't have standards, and are entitled. They're not a new generation of fighters. They're the decadent court flunkies who wander around the capital of a collapsing dynasty before it gets destroyed. They hate having children, having their nation survive, hunting, or anything virile. The young people in the left belong to what is a suicide cult. The older people confuse the left's ability to organize and riot with actual military ability. This is a common historical pattern where the Marxists always riot and agitate, and then when the right organizes, it goes from a 0 to 100 immediately. This is what happened in Germany between the wars, Chile, Indonesia, Hungary, France, and so many other countries. The left is so much more emotional than the right, so they feel the need to LARP more. The problem is they're so idealistic that more often than not they get slaughtered by the right once it pulls its men together. The thing is that for young people, the lack of opportunities in absolutely everything, whether economic, sexual, political, social, and residential, is profoundly visceral. Older people can't understand it, and I already hear some objecting. But I swear this is a real issue, and if you don't hear it from me now, you'll hear it from the mob later. Gen Z is 90% less spending power than their parents. At least 70% of 21-year-old men are virgins. The ruling class doesn't care enough about the young to even acknowledge this, let alone do something about it. This applies both across the right and the left, which is why young people are so polarized. The fundamental reality is there's very little reason to not fight as a young man. They have their entire lives ahead of them. Once 80% of the population knows they're screwed, they're willing to roll the dice, even if theoretically half of them die, since that way there's at least some chance they'll get a better life where they can reproduce. Don't say this can't happen, since it's easily happened dozens of times before across history. I often see older generations say young men are unwilling to fight, and that's simply not true. The irony is that this condescension will be a big reason young men will fight. Young men in America have been continually spit on and insulted for their entire lives. They're treated like they have no value and they're worthless scum. Keep in mind, these are the descendants of the American Revolution, Civil War, Vikings, and conquistadors. Not a society that takes oppression well. Another important point is that the political opinions of normies really don't matter. The political opinions which matter in civil wars are those of the organized people with weapons. It's normal in civil wars or revolutions for the most radical factions, which are only indicative of a tiny percentage of the population, to win, since they're the best organized and fanatical. We see this in England with the Puritans, in America with the Radical Republicans, France with the Jacobins, the Nazis in Germany, or the Bolsheviks in Russia. In most cases, these groups were less than 3% of the population at the start of these wars, but punched above their weight to take over. People often say that Gen Z is too obese, cowardly, or lazy to fight. That might be true, but they're not going to get a choice. What will happen is that intelligent, well-organized, and fanatical political types inside Gen Z will organize and then conscript the weak. The weak won't organize and so won't have any leverage at all. In almost all revolutions or civil wars, most normal people want to just be left alone, but they don't do anything or organize, so small groups of radicals dominate politics and conscript the normies. Look at the English Civil War, in which people said before the war that the English had grown too weak and peaceful to fight. What happened instead was that the radicals conscripted the normies to fight. The English Civil War was mostly fought by apathetic people pulled off the bar floor or from small villages. This is what will happen here. Part 4, the election. Our two political parties disputed the last two elections, either saying it's through election interference from Russia or due to mail-in ballots. The thing is that none of those tensions have been dealt with. When issues aren't solved, they pile up into something a lot worse. The country is also fundamentally much worse off than it was 4 years ago. Biden has imported 12 million illegal immigrants in the last 3 years. For a frame of reference for how insane that is, we had about 45 million illegals in the 45 years before that. It's hard to find good numbers, but I've seen some stuff saying the Biden administration has doubled the amount of money printing we were doing, which was already at ludicrous levels before COVID. 10 years ago, we had the highest debt in American history, and we've doubled it since. It wasn't until 1980 that the US had $1 trillion of debt. We're now at $33 trillion. Our debt today is larger than our entire economy for the first time ever. Biden has added $6 trillion worth of debt so far. I'm not going to let Trump off the hook here, but he only added a much smaller amount of what Biden did, and it was also during a major international crisis, that was COVID, which Biden showed up after. For the first time in American history, we spend more money paying off the interest for our debt than the military. Keep in mind the interest rate is 3% of the total debt, so how are we going to pay the rest? The thing here is that I've been researching this video and there's so much misinformation. For this litany of stats I just gave you, I don't know if that's true. I think at least some of that information's wrong, and I don't believe any of the stats coming out from the government. It just doesn't add up. I have a friend who's a professional statistician, and he was saying the standard of living has remained constant since COVID. And I said, that's insane. There's no way that can be true because the cost of everything, whether real estate, food, has doubled since COVID, and there's no way in hell wages have doubled in that time. Talk to people, right or left, or go through the comment sections of videos which say the economy is good. The numbers the government is putting out are impossible. The elite is bald-facedly lying to us, and they think we're idiots who won't notice. I have two eyes, and I'm seeing the world. There's no way so many of the things they're talking about are true. However, the fact that we can't trust literally anything the elite says is a very sad fact about modern life. It wasn't true 10 or 30 or whatever years ago. If some of you don't agree, what can you trust in our society? Our corporations and media constantly lie. Academia has turned into ideological propaganda. It's hard to find any honest people in our nation today. The problem is the two parties literally cannot survive with the other party winning another term. For the Republicans, the financial policies and immigration drives the Biden administration are doing are rotting the country in real time. If Biden has another term and the policies he's pushing now will continue to destroy the country. For the Democrats, they don't have a response to the Trump threat. Trump leads Biden massively. The left has gone very far left, meaning that they only pander to the managerial class. The Democrats are so desperate to take Trump off the ballot since they can't beat the threat he represents. They are importing millions of illegal immigrants since they want to make a docile, stable voting bloc dependent upon welfare. They're doing all of this out of insecurity. The problem is that the left has been gradually alienating larger and larger percentages of the population in order to keep their core fan base happy with them. The problem here is that the core leftist fan base is completely delusional, and so in order to keep their audience happy, the Democrats have to do things that destroy society, like printing vast amounts of money or taking in millions of immigrants to assuage the anxieties of the insane. The budget is a great example of this. We've only been barely able to pass a budget every few months. The thing is that each time we pass a budget, let's say there's a 20% chance things fall apart. However, once you take 10 of those shots, you're getting really high chances that the budget falls apart. If you look over history, the number one thing which causes these kinds of civil wars or revolution is budget issues, with the French Revolution being a really easy example. We can't kick this can down the road forever, but we don't have any other solution. Once things get like this, it only takes one time someone says fuck it and starts a war. What this all means is the US economy will go through absolutely horrible times in the future as our currency gets destroyed by the US filing for bankruptcy. The reason we'll do this is that we'll keep spending until we go bankrupt or default given we're so addicted to easy money today. The problem with all of this spending is that the government printing money causes the rise in capital and inflation, which hurts the wages of normal Americans and increases inequality, as I explained in this text wall. The reason COVID was the most rapid increase in inequality ever is also the reason it was the largest amount of government money printing and welfare ever. This is why BlackRock can buy up all these homes and create ESG scores which completely dominate the economy. They're taking all the easy money from the government which naturally flows into the stock market. When you got your COVID payments, you spent them on Amazon, which went to their stock and thus into the stock stock market. This is how we can have a good stock market and economy on paper while everyone you know is broke or barely getting by. The problem is that across society, no one can afford to not have a civil war. With the way things are going, America simply can't sustain itself for another 4 years. For both the Republican and Democratic leaders, they will be better able to maintain power by starting a civil war than keep going. With another 4 years of Biden, Republican voters will want to secede. It goes the other way with Trump and the left too, where the left views him as a tyrant trying to destroy democracy. Something I've spoken about in previous videos, and especially this one, is the incredible similarities between the Roman and American empires. And if you want to look at the cycle of civilizations, the era which corresponds to us is the fall of the Roman Republic around 100 BC. And what happened then was that the Romans, who had all the same issues as us today, including inequality, political polarization, a large empire that they held reluctantly, and things such as the collapse of a middle class, Rome was divided between two political parties, the populist populares and the deep state elitist optimates. And what happened was that the Gracchi brothers were wealthy tycoons who became very politically popular through trying to revive the old Roman dying middle class, which was losing due to competition with slave labor from outside Italy. And they wanted to basically make Rome great again. Then what happened was that the optimates deep state tried to invalidate the Gracchis through saying that they were trying to make themselves dictators, take them off the ballot, and then they assassinated the Gracchis. But what happened after this was Rome spiraled into its civil wars, which killed the Republic. It's been said about World War I that it's a series of rational, short-term decisions which ended up in madness. That's what's going to happen here. There will come a decision point where one faction decides to start the war, and then everyone will sit in complete shock that America is now divided and their sons must fight in the Siege of Chicago now. When the English Civil War started, neither side was ready for it. They then took the first 6 months of the war, building up armies to fight. I think this is the most likely option for us. America has a big and powerful military, but trying to figure out how it splits up will be a painful process. This is a pattern we've seen in each of the Anglo-Saxon wars, where the first few months of the war are building up armies by fundamentally unprepared people involved. This was the American Revolution, both World Wars, and the American Civil War. When all's said and done, the war will start, and after some time it will appear normal. You'll still have to wake up in the morning, eat breakfast, and do your job. Past a certain point, peace will feel strange. Do you remember a time when New York City hadn't been burnt down?